Last time we talked to Robs, which was 4 weeks ago, he was promising to go bush in a... I mean, I was calling it trying to get lost, but we know he's not going to get lost because he's used to doing... You're used to doing this sort of thing.
Yeah.
But you were down in the Nelson...
Nelson Lakes.
Nelson Lakes area.
Yeah, it was a new environment for me.
Okay. And did you get up on the top of the ridges at all? There's a nice view up there.
Nah. Oh, man, it's so beautiful down there.
Mm. Well, and did you get attacked by sandflies? Because also, they're quite famous in that area.
I did, but not as much as the stories will tell you.
Okay.
Yeah, I've spent a lot of time down there over the years, and they were no worse than here, to be honest. They weren't that bad. And it's only lakeside. Okay. I wasn't lakeside very often anyway. So once you're off away from the lakeside, there aren't any. There's none.
Yeah, that's true. It's by one of the lakes. Is it Rotorua? Is that the name of it?
Yeah, it's about Rotorua. And,
I was
the Rotuiti side.
Okay.
To the big lake.
And so describe for us what you did is in your attempt to reconnect with nature.
Yeah. So this was possibly one of the most challenging missions I've done. My intention is pretty much just to try and be comfortable. So I was going in pretty much with nothing.
Did you have a knife?
No knife.
Not even a knife
this
time.
No shoes. No special clothes.
I just checked his feet. They're all right.
Just like I am now.
Yep. No special clothes?
No.
So you're wearing some trousers, a long sleeve shirt, and a hoodie.
Yeah.
Basically.
I'm trying not to buy my way into comfort, but to find it, and technically I shouldn't need to make any special purchases.
Okay.
Technically, I could be stark naked and still be perfectly comfortable if my skill set was adequate, which it isn't, as the story will tell you.
Oh, okay. All right. Let's hear it.
So it's all, it's a challenge, and it's... nature's a great reminder to be mindful of your ego. Not that I feel I've got a big ego, I'm always a student, and I never feel like, oh, I'm a master and I'm so skilled. I'm never like that. I'm always learning, I'm always at the kindergarten of nature skills. So it was a sunny day when I got there, which means it's going to be cold at night.
Yeah.
It was stunningly beautiful. It was pretty quiet. I don't need to go miles away. I just want to be away from people. It doesn't really look any different if I walk for 3 hours, as long as it's kind of quiet. And
it's probably as quiet as it can be in that area because the ski season hasn't started up, but the summer activities are probably over.
Yeah, it was. There's a couple of dot campgrounds there, and neither of them were particularly bustling. I knew it was going to be a cold night. Got three options. One is to make a fire and get warmth from the fire, obviously. Two is to make a shelter called a debris shelter, just using leaf litter and whatever you can find. Which kind of acts like a sleeping bag. You have it really tiny, so you can only just fit in.
Yeah.
And it just retains all your body heat like a sleeping bag would.
Does it take a while to heat up?
Not really.
Okay.
As long as you're hot. If you do a bit of a workout before you get in.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
Then your body heat expels a lot quicker.
We're so used to being comfortable that almost the idea of doing some physical exercise to warm up almost doesn't occur to us.
Nah.
In some ways.
And that's a big part of it, really, is finding comfort in discomfort, or in what we perceive to be discomfort from our modern lifestyles.
Yeah.
There's a debris shelter, or third option is to just walk all night, because if you walk in, you generate body heat, and that'll get you through. Fairly, you'll be tired, obviously, but not uncomfortable.
Did you bring food or water?
No.
Okay.
No, not. It was only 2 days, so it's not really... You were pretty lucky in New Zealand. Like, you can always find water when you're in the wild places anyway,
When you're in the Nelson Lakes area too, it's pretty clear where the water is.
It was so wet. It was so boggy, because I guess the hills, quite a few months each year of they're capped with snow, so they just got all of that water seeping through,
yeah,
and it never really leaves. Like, everywhere underfoot was boggy.
Right.
Absolutely everywhere. So, yeah, I managed to find there's a bit of flax growing by the lakeside. So awesome! I can make some rope, make some cordage. I made a couple of meters of cordage. There was some stones, so I tried sharpening a stone to use as a bit of a blade. Tinder was fairly easy to find.
Yeah,
you know, there was some dry. It's kind of beech forest up there because it's subalpine, so beech leaves are pretty good and plentiful.
Yeah,
but small. And then I had to try and put together a fire set. So it's either a bow drill, a hand drill, or a plow. There's three different techniques. Basically, it's all bits of wood, and you rub them.
Okay.
And they get hot.
Yeah.
Just slightly different techniques. And when I'm doing that here, it's, you know, I guess I'm so familiar with this environment and this mountain that I always know where to look. And you know, there's an abundance of different timbers I can use.
So can I check, had you gone very far? Like, did you start off in St. Arnold Village and kind of hear
that? Yeah, pretty much. Parked up to the campsite and just walked along the lakeside a little bit.
Yeah.
And then just crossed, went off track straight away once I had some cordage and a few bits.
Yeah.
And just started heading up the slopes a little bit. With no real destination, you know, just sort of wandering and watching and observing. Yeah. And
this is interesting for me because it's like one of the few places I've actually been, like in a fourth form camp. We went up from the lakeside all the way up to the ridge and over the ridge and camped in the snow.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's a cool mission.
So I might have mentioned this last time. There were 12 boys and we were supposed to bring three tents. I bought a tent. Someone else bought a tent, but the third tent got left behind. So we had to like cram into these tents anyway.
Comfortable. Maybe I should have gone up top. I'll talk about it later.
Yeah.
So I'm missioning around and then I'm soon realizing, man, there's not much diversity here. It's pretty much, there's the odd little thicket of Manuka, which, you know, you can make fire with Manuka. But otherwise everything was beech. There wasn't many sort of shrubs or lower forest plants. Just beech. No ferns. Not one fern. Fern's usually quite an important, plant to find, because that's, if you do make a shelter, you know, that's the bulk of your leaf litter and your insulation and your mattress is, yes, like dry fern fronds.
Yeah.
So no ferns, none of the trees which I'd use for fire up here. Because it's cold, things are kind of growing as you would if it was freezing cold, you know, not you know, loud and proud and stretching big and tall, a little bit more, I don't know, how do you describe that, you know, huddled.
Oh, yes.
So there's not many straight branches, so a hand drill was pretty much impossible, just because you need at least, I don't know, 20 centimetres or more of really straight sort of finger thickness dry wood.
Yeah.
And that just didn't seem to exist, not in a beech forest. Plough as well. Plough, you need like specific timbers, like the softwoods. So Mahoe's, Kaikomako are quite famous species to use for that.
Yeah.
But none of them around, none of them to be seen, just beech. So not really an option. So my only option was a bow drill. And I had the cordage. So bow drill is when you kind of make a bow, like a bow and arrow bow, but not with a tight cord.
Yeah.
And you wrap a straight piece of wood in it, around it. So as you sort of make a soaring motion, it spins the wood for you.
Super fast spinning.
Yeah, a lot faster than you could with your hands.
Yeah, I think I've seen video footage somewhere on it. Probably someone on some movie did it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's kind of, it's probably one of the more involved in terms of, there's quite a lot of elements to being successful.
So you had to make the string.
But then it is probably the easiest, you know, if someone could do a bow drill the first time ever and, you know, potentially get themselves an ember once they got it, know how to get it spinning.
Okay.
Which isn't really as true for the other techniques. But the big problem was bow drill, you're using thicker bits of wood. Hand drill, you know, you're just using finger thickness.
Yeah.
And maybe thumb thickness for the bottom piece of wood. And because I didn't have a knife, and you do need to carve them a little bit, is manageable with these little bits of wood.
Yeah.
Making a little notch and cutting a little divot out. But with a bowl drill, man, it was so hard.
It was
beech, which is a beautiful timber.
So how thick was the piece of timber? Are we talking about like 4 centimetres?
Yeah, kind of, like, I don't know, two of my fingers. Yeah, probably
sort of
that.
3 or 4 centimetres, yeah.
4 centimetres.
Yeah. And you've got to cut that with a stone that you hand sharpen.
Yeah, so the bottom piece, you want it to be fairly flat.
Yes.
So it sits flat on the ground and flat on the top. So
and dry, obviously.
Bone dry, yeah, it needs to be bone dry. And because it's so damp, finding any bone dry wood, the only real way to do that would be to find a thick piece of wood.
Yeah.
And then use the middle part of it.
But you're not going to do that with stones
well,
to cut your way in?
I had to try.
Oh, no. So hold on. How thick was the piece of wood you tried to get this in?
Well, so one way you can do it is if you snap a piece of wood, sometimes it splinters.
Yeah.
And, you know, you can almost pull it in half.
Okay.
Giving you a flat side.
Yeah.
So you can try that. But failing that, sharpen some rocks and use them as chisels to chip away and try and shape pieces of wood.
What are the rocks like there? There's no volcanic rocks. That's a glacial area, from memory.
Yeah. No, it was also a grey whack. You know, traditionally, if you're using stone tools, you're using things like flint and obsidian, which are a lot more sort of crystallised and sort of glassy.
But you're not getting that around there.
Not getting that around there.
Yeah, okay.
So it was quite improvised.
Mm-hmm.
And very time consuming. To cut a long story short, I spent a lot of that afternoon trying to shape this fire kit and then getting it going. I didn't manage to get an ember.
Oh, really?
I made one set and tried my best and gave it my best, and you know, I got it spinning pretty well. And
were you getting smoke coming out at all?
Yeah, like tons of smoke, tons of dust.
Yeah.
Dust is what turns into the ember, the sort of black charcoal dust which you get, which once that gets hot enough. But I think just too much moisture.
Mm.
So it was kind of getting dark. I went back lakeside, and because you're using natural cordage as well, you know, if you're using a shoelace or paracord, you know, that's sort of pretty, you know, manufactured to be quite tough.
Yeah.
But natural fibres, even the bought ones, you know, they're not as abrasion resistant.
Right. And they're getting worked quite hard by that process.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's a lot of contact with the wood. And
so you were snapping a lot?
Probably half an hour. I got half an hour of use out of it.
How
which normally, you know, would be plenty of time. But because of the dampness in the ground, the dampness in the air.
So how were you feeling as it became clear that it was going to be too challenging?
I guess that ego part of me disappointed, but also excited, because that's why I go, you know. I go to be shown things that, you know, are opportunities for me to, there's a lot more for me to journey with in this area. But I think the big learning on that first day, so basically, you know, my cordage snapped and I thought, oh, this thing is getting dark. And I wandered back down to the lakeside where the flax was, and I made another roll of cordage, and I made another set just with some manuka, which is growing along the lakeside. Just kind of desperation stuff.
Yeah.
And again, I got it really good. And maybe if the sun was out, I'd have got an ember there. But I didn't, and I'm exhausted.
Yeah.
And because there's no ferns, there's not really any leaf litter, you know. Beech leaves are so tiny, and they return to the ground quite quickly. So making a shelter wasn't an option.
Are you very fit, just out of curiosity?
Not very fit.
Not very fit,
but
yeah.
Not unfit.
Yeah.
Just, you know, I don't make any effort to be fit, but my lifestyle, you get free fitness with it.
Yeah, but doing that all afternoon is taxing.
Yeah, and it's a lot of mind energy going, you know, mental energy being, you know, there's a lot of problem solving, continuous problem solving. And so by the time it got dark, my only option, my two options were either to walk all night,
yes,
which I obviously hadn't planned for, or to bail and just, I don't know, do whatever I could, go find my car, which didn't have any warm things in it.
No, I know people who sleep in cars overnight in cold places, and it doesn't, you feel like you're sheltered, but the temperature doesn't.
Yeah, temperature isn't, but yeah, it's definitely helps.
And walking all night to keep warm, that's all right if you can see where you're going.
Yeah.
You can walk fast and build up some...
There wasn't much moon, but surprisingly, the starlight with the lake was enough. So okay. I think I'd have managed that. But even in the dark, you see without your eyes magically. You know, you feel your feel your way through.
Yeah, and you're used to that, using all your senses in that environment.
Yep.
Yeah, which is, yeah, which I wouldn't be, yeah.
And, you know, in hindsight, what an amazing place to walk through the night, in the peace of the night along the lakeside, you know.
Mm.
But I knew, because I was already absolutely exhausted, and yeah, I could have done my night walk, but that was probably me going home tomorrow, because if you're expending too much energy... Just the simple things become really hard for you.
Yeah.
And, you know, my body in a cold night would have had enough energy on that first night, you know, to walk, or if I was by a fire, or if I was in a little shelter, to kind of to subsidize the heat, which I wasn't getting.
Yeah.
But the second night, if I had one exhausting night, if I didn't sleep well or from walking all night, that second night is really the danger night.
Yeah,
because I don't have that energy, so being cold becomes a real danger, because my body's got no resources to make up for it and to help out to generate its own heat at all. I'm really vulnerable that second night.
Right.
And obviously, you know, it's never about putting myself in danger in a way. You know, I'm always trying to be safe. So that first night, for the sake of sticking around for a couple more days, I just walked along the lakeside back to the car and had a chilly night in the car, but managed to get a little bit of sleep, and then woke up at sunrise and then started again for day two.
Yep. So you did get some sleep.
A little bit, yeah. But yeah, I had a bit of energy in the tank, which meant I could stay. Second day, the clouds were starting to come over, the wind was starting to change.
Yeah.
So it's a warning sign for some rain on the way. But yeah, back to Baldrills. So I spent the morning.
So you used your rest to then try and get the fire going during the day.
Yeah, well, I had to start again, basically. I made some thicker cordage so it wouldn't break. I got really good at making cordage, by the way.
I'll keep that in mind if I need any.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, and trying to find some better rocks and some better materials, really. But I think my big lesson from that day one was, if it's not working, you know, maybe that's nature's way of telling you it's not a fire night tonight. And to be able to accept that. So,
but you need to go through that experience of, maybe I can, like, I know what it's like. Maybe if I do this, I'll get it, and then you don't get it. So maybe if I try that, and that can take you several hours. So, but now you've had that experience.
Now I've had that experience, and, you know, in other ways, not in this environment, but it's not the first time I've sort of had that experience. But what I should have done is, you know, around after a couple of hours of working on a Baldrill set and it not working, you know, there's too much moisture, this isn't a night for a fire.
Yeah.
Actually just rested while the sun was out.
Mm.
Got 4 or 5 hours rest. And by the time I'd finished out, I'd have been pumped for a night walk. You know, I'd have been prepared. And
yeah,
what, you know, as I say, there's no more beautiful place just to walk around the lake in the peace of night. Like, it would have been a beautiful experience. But that's not what happened. But that was a good teaching for me, for sure.
So did you get the fire going the next day? No. Oh, dear.
I'd learned a bit from day one.
Yeah.
So I tried, I made a good set. I gave it a go. I gave it a bit of time. But I didn't want my whole 2 days in the Nelson Lakes to just be working to get a fire,
yeah,
which wasn't going to light. You know, this is a bit pointless. So I'd learnt from day one. I was like, all right, cool. No fire. All good. It's going to rain soon. I'm just going to go and enjoy myself and go for a bit of a wander.
Yeah.
You know, and I had a little snooze on this hill. There's a lot of deer tracks, so I sort of was following some deer tracks. I was listening. A lot of interactions with some beautiful birds. Just enjoying being there, you know, sort of taking it in. And then the rain started coming. Had a good stash of firewood and no shelter. No means of making a shelter, really. The only way I could have potentially done it is by finding a bunch of sticks, like a lot of sticks, on top of each other, and enough to sort of create a seal, and then scraped soil off the forest floor as a roof to sort of potentially waterproof it.
Yeah.
But I don't really want to take that from the forest just for one night.
Yeah.
You know, it belongs on the forest floor, as do the, you know, the sticks, really. That's sort of there where they're destined to be.
Yeah.
But there was a lot of uprooted beech trees in some areas, like a ton of them. And some of them create a bit of an overhang when they bring all that dirt up with their roots.
Oh, yeah. Yep. So that's at the base.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that was going to be my shelter. I found one which had enough of an overhang for me to sort of lie underneath it. But the only thing is they pull water, because obviously they create a sort of ditch.
So you kind
of
sleep in
and
a puddle.
And it rains. And it's very soft clay, you know.
Yeah,
it's just
been
dug up, basically. Yeah. It's just been loosened. So it's like a sponge. So I needed to make a bed to get off the ground, which is fairly easy, you know. Just find a couple of straight sticks about as long as I am, parallel to each other.
Yeah.
And then some smaller ones, lateral to them, as a mattress so you can lie on and get off the ground. There was a ton of rocks, which were great. I made a fire pit. I had fire stuff ready, and I had a flint strike in the car. So,
which is not where you were.
Which is not where I was, and you know it was pretty wet by the time I got there. But the challenge, you know, had moved on from trying to light a fire in this environment to surviving or being comfortable through a night of rain. You know, with pretty minimal stuff.
So is that what you did?
Yeah. So when
I'm fully expecting you to be back in the car for the second night.
Nah. I went back. I got the flint strike.
Okay.
I got a fire going in the rain, which is all, you know, it's always a good thing to practice as well, actually lighting a fire with rain raining on it at the same time.
Yeah. That's challenging. But do you feel you cheated because you went and got the flint strike?
A bit of my ego does, but like, I don't really listen to that. I think, you know, I go to these places and I experience what I need to experience, and you know, the things which I struggle with or I need help with are just areas for me to give a bit more time and energy. And my plan is to go back in August. I'm due down to see my parents down in Nelson again and try again and go again and learn more and without expectation.
Coldest time of the year.
Yeah. I like a challenge. But in the meantime, you know, I can work on making useful tools out of stones, you know.
Increase those skills.
Yeah, you know, there's a ton of things for me to work on. And that's, you know, in a way, that's what I love. And that's what these experiences teach me. If I just went in and I made a fire and I had a really comfortable experience, my ego would have been happy. I'd have thought, oh, I'm good at this.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't have learned a whole heap.
So do you think in that same environment you could build your skills up to the point where you could get the fire going without the flint strike?
I don't have an expectation, but I'm going to try.
Okay.
Like, if it's possible, I'm going to try and find a way how it is possible.
Yeah.
And if I can't find that, then I'm going to learn a whole heap along the way anyway, so it doesn't really matter. You know, I know it's, I don't think from what I know, it was an area which was particularly inhabited, but it was travelled, you know, it was travelled through, because it's the pass from east to west, really.
Yeah.
Well,
also from Nelson, like, that's where they the colonial period, they had that top house place where
everyone
came up from the Wairau Valley and up from Nelson and over from the west coast. And
It was a big traveling area and a hugely challenging area for
clearly
for living.
We should say we're at 10 o'clock now, but we should have a caveat on this. If anyone's listening and thinking, hey, I'll just go and try what Rob's has done, can you just walk? You shouldn't just walk out of your house and do that. I guess we know that. You have a lot of experience at doing this sort of thing. So what do you say if someone's thinking now, thinking, oh, I'll have a go at that?
I think just take it slow and steady, you know. I mean, if you even just want to spend the night without a sleeping bag, you know, bring one anyway, initially, and try, and even if you just have an hour without it, you'll learn a lot in that hour, and you'll experience a lot in that hour, and there's no point, you know, putting yourself at risk or being really miserable. But you'll learn things in an hour, so all right, next time I try, I need to do this, you know, maybe I need to have insulation underneath me, or I need to have a windbreak on the side, or listen to your heart more than your head, and listen to nature, what nature's, you know, trying to show you and tell you, but not pushing it too hard from your ego.
Yeah.
You know, it's not a race. It's just it's a beautiful experience for you to have there, which, you know, will connect you with your, I guess, your ancestral being and that, you know, primitive human within you, and that's a beautiful thing to experience. But it doesn't need to be an extreme to experience that. You know, you can have it in little bite-sized pieces, and you know, and you'll be walking that path just as quickly, probably, as if you were really pushing it to the extremes, I think.
Yeah. So for people who don't know Rob's, he has a heck of a lot of experience at this sort of thing. Time spent just observing the natural world, which we all, our ancestors all understood that was the world they were familiar with. We're much more familiar with urban environments. So you've taken years to build up the knowledge you do have and the skills that you do have.
Mm.
And I know the odds are very unlikely, but I wouldn't like to see someone thinking they're just going to head off and put themselves in a dangerous place.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, in a way, you can probably connect with experiences you've already had. You know, you probably spent a night on your deck or wherever, on the beach or on the paddock, without a sleeping bag or any covers, doing a bit of stargazing, without an intention to be out all night.
Yeah.
And you get to a point and it's like, oh, it's a bit chilly, should we go home or should we go inside? But if you couldn't go home or go inside, you know, if you just pushed it and stayed out an extra 10 minutes or half an hour, that experience is, you know, it's going to be similar to being in the bush and feeling that cold of the night, but without the anticipation of another 12 hours ahead of you to get through.
Yeah, yeah. All right, Rob, thank you for coming in this morning.
Cool, it's a pleasure.
And this has been our Nature Connection chat. Any announcements for Kuratiao or anything like that in the next few months?
No, I'm just about to head up to the Institute of Awesome this morning to scan out the place for a potential camp.
Okay.
Nature Connection, Naturecraft camp for everyone, really. Usually we run them for families, but, you know, it's just a very inclusive. If you're interested, come along and learn what you feel like you need to learn.
Okay. All right, Rob, thanks for coming in.
Cheers.
Okay, folks, that is the end of the show for the day. Hope you enjoyed it. I'll be back again tomorrow morning.